insurance. Encourage courage.
Well, that's a good idea. Encourage courage. I like that. And you are listening. This is WMNF Tampa, Sarasota Clearwater Community Conscious Radio. Hi, I'm Mary Glennie, and over there, Arlene Englehart. Hi, Arlene.
Hi, Mary. I'm Arlene Englehart, as she said, and you are listening to From a Woman's Point of View. You're going to really want to stay tuned today. We have several interesting guests, and one of them will be R.J. Gillum, talking about a little bit about herself and about her husband's background and their teamwork. Should be an interesting time. I wanted to share this with you. It's from Arundhati Roy. The corporate revolution will collapse if we refuse to buy what they are selling: their ideas, their version of history, their wars, their weapons, their notion of inevitability. Remember this: we may be many and they be few. They need us more than we need them. Another world is not only possible, she is on her way. On a quiet day, I can hear her breathing. Arundhati Roy.
That's a very beautiful thought, and I think particularly with all the chaos and distress of these times, number one, it's important for all of us to keep breathing, but to keep those wise words in mind, that another world is not only possible, there are so many worlds just waiting there for us to take advantage of them and do it. And I'm really excited because with us right now in the studio, we have Chris Kahn, and because, you know, we're coming up in the elections, voting has never been more important. And particularly, I think we want the young people to realize that it, frankly, is their world. And so, Chris, Arlene, you're right there. Would you make sure she's got her...
I believe I'm on.
Okay, great. And you are on the Voters Committee with the League of Women Voters Florida, right?
That's pretty close. Good morning. I'm so excited to be here. Yeah, I am the Voter Services Chair for Hillsborough County League of Women Voters. And we have been doing a lot of work to be engaged during this pre-election time frame. And I'm excited to share with you a party at the polls that we are hosting at the USF main campus next Monday, October 22nd from 2 to 7.
Well, Chris, I'm so excited. Here you are in your Tampa General. I mean, obviously a volunteer doing all this kind
of work. Absolutely, as we all are.
And you have so generously come down to the studio today, and I couldn't agree with you. It's more important because it is a new world. I mean, in other words, this chaos, but it's still exciting. And never has it been more important that our voices are heard and vote, and the young people particularly. And you've been working a lot with young people, and so Party at the Polls. So let's go into it. What's happening?
So Party at the Polls is an initiative of Civic Nation. It is their initiative to vote together to make voting a chance for everyone to be engaged as a community civically and to celebrate the act of voting. So I, along with Susan Greenbaum, one of our members, has been meeting on campus with some other student groups, and we have been received a grant to host a party at the polls on the first day of early voting, which is this Monday, October 22nd. It is at the Yingling Center, Gate A, and across from Gate A near the Mumaw College of Business, we will be hosting our celebration of Party at the Polls. Student Perg is working with us. We will have food from 2 to 7. We will have games. We are going to have a DJ. We have a few people signed up for entertainment. Would love some student groups to come entertain as well. And we are just going to be out there trying to gather students, staff, faculty to come to our party and then hopefully increase participation with them going across the street to the vote.
And if they're registered to vote, they can vote that day.
Absolutely. A lot of student groups have been very busy on campus getting people registered through the 9th. And on top of that, they will be passing out flyers through now and October 22nd to get patients. You can tell I'm a nurse. to get students out to the polls on Monday. On Saturday, some of the league members will be canvassing some of the apartments and homes outside that area because this polling center is for anybody in Hillsborough County can go and vote at this early polling center, at any polling center. So we're going to try to get the community right along USF as well as the USF community out there. Our goal is for this to be an annual event. that we, on an ongoing basis, have a party not only at USF but other areas in Hillsborough County. I cannot recall how many parties the League is having statewide, but it's a huge amount. And this is our first time as the League of Women Voters being engaged with Party at the Polls. So we are extremely excited to for Monday to get here and to meet all these young students and faculty and just say to everyone, your vote does matter. And so it is a privilege to vote. We wanted to make it a big celebration and come out, enjoy the time, meet people, and we'll also have a League table there as well. We have free student memberships this year for students, and we would encourage you to come by, learn about the League. We will also have our voter guides out, which goes over the amendments and also has some feedback from some of the candidates about their positions.
And I talked to your Florida president, Patricia Brigham, yesterday with the amendments, but then the schedule got changed at the last minute, so we'll be bringing that next week. And I really want to encourage people to go to your website. You've got terrific information.
Absolutely.
You really give the background to every amendment and the League's position, et cetera. But also you give some positions of some of the others, too. And so I think it's a very comprehensive analysis of all the amendments. But I'm going to go back because particularly with the terrible shootings down in Parkland, you know, that it was almost a spark was put on an awful lot of students. And we interviewed a lot of them and a lot of them in our local area. And so tell me, because you and I were talking just a few minutes before this interview, and that there were so many groups registering. You went to help register, you know, students there, that this has kind of evolved organically. It's what the students wanted, right?
Absolutely. I was so impressed with the level of engagement of the students and student government, which is going to have a march to the polls during our party on Monday. They're going to do a march from Marshall Center to the polls, arriving around 3:30. But student government, Next Gen, Student Perg, and Mary and Kenosian, who is their lead, has been helping a lot with this party. Next Generation, Campus Engagement Project. I mean, all these groups are out there wanting to get their students to vote. And then our hope as the League is to take all these registered voters and teach them how to be engaged voters throughout their lifetime. Where do you go to get information about candidates? How do you keep track of when elections are happening? So it's not just voting once. It's staying engaged, looking at issues and candidates and making sure that the things that you vote for really turn into reality. And if they don't, then the next election, it's time to be engaged again, in addition to speaking out to the people who represent you. So I have been very impressed with the students on campus. Justin Fitzgerald, who is with their Department of Civic Engagement, has been very helpful as well. And I have to give a shout out to Savannah Newsom with Aramark on campus, who's helping us with the food as well. So we're excited for a long-term relationship with USF and other communities here in Hillsborough County.
Well, now, Chris, we're talking to Chris Kahn, and she's with the League of Women Voters Florida Chapter, Hillsborough County, actually, voting committee. Have you been involved with voting efforts for many years, or is this new, never for you, or what?
You know what? I have always been interested in elections, etc., but I, like many other people, I was always very busy. So I've only been a member of the League of Women Voters for 2 years now, and I would have to say it's one of the best decisions I made. And I would encourage everyone, even if you don't want to be actively engaged in our activities, we're a wealth of information about issues and keeping track of the different issues. We have subcommittees on health care, education, gun safety, the environment. We've done a lot with solar co-op. So I think as a citizen, we're a great nonpartisan organization to get information about issues. So I would strongly encourage everyone to look at the League, at least for a resource, and secondly, consider joining it.
And also, Arlene, you scored ahead if you have something to say.
We've had a phone request for you to repeat the website that you mentioned earlier.
The website I'll give a couple websites.
The League of Women Voters.
I don't know for sure what they were.
So if you are interested in Vote Together, which is through Civic Nation, you can just Google Vote Together, and it will come up a large website that talks about who they are, who their partners are. If you're interested in the Hillsborough County League of Women Voters, our website is hclwv.org. If you are looking for the state site, if you just put in League of Women Voters Florida, it'll take you to that site, and there's lots of amendments information on that site that pop up as soon as you go there. But another website I would mention if you're interested is 411.org. You put in your address. It is a national initiative by the league, and you put in your address. It will pop up the people and the issues that will be on your ballot, and there is information from candidates that they've submitted, and you will in this county see the amendments as well.
And what was that?
411.org.
And you're using the numbers when you
vote 411.org. Sorry, I forgot the vote. Vote411.org. But if you go to the League of Women Voters site in Florida, you'll get lots of good information on the amendments. We have also distributed hard copy guides to all of our libraries. So they have some resources there, and we're trying to distribute those to campuses, et cetera.
And I can't recommend their site enough, the Florida League of Women Voters, 40 Amendments. It gives very good discussion and very much in layperson's terms. Don't worry about it.
Absolutely.
And you will be able to understand it. But you'll want to spend some time because this is really important. There are some very, very important amendments. And as I said, we'll be discussing that more because we talked to Patricia Brigham, but we will be bringing that next week rather than this week now. And so real quickly, because Connie, I know that Chris, I know that you're really a busy person, being a nurse, et cetera. And tell me, real quickly, what are some of the issues that you are most concerned about in this election?
Personally?
Yes.
There's so many to choose. I think we had a wonderful candidate forum co-hosted with the Kiwanis yesterday, and I'm extremely concerned about education in this county and what are we going to do to provide the right environment for our students. We have a lot of great teachers. My children went to high school here, so I think that is a big issue. I think where we go with climate change is huge to a lot of people that live along the coast here. Now after Hurricane Michael, I'm actually been listening to a lot about the building code, so that's kind of an interest. But I think just overall, I'm a believer of that government is of the people and for the people. And so how are our resources being spent to provide a better community and framework for us to live and grow? So I think wages, and of course, healthcare is extremely important to me.
It's a major.
I'm probably a little biased about the healthcare, but I just believe in a country with all these resources, healthcare should be easy and accessible to everybody. And I think there's lots of opportunities for us to make a difference with that, with who we elect and moving forward.
Well, Chris Kahn, I really want to thank you. I know how busy you are. I'm very impressed you came right from work and you have to go back to work, that you've given us this time today. And I think the party at the polls sounds like a wonderful idea. And I think it could be really enthusiastic, and
absolutely,
so the students would enjoy it. And you know, I was hearing, I think some radio station the other day, and this beer company, of all people, are trying to have a national holiday on voting. And they said, it has to be a celebration, and this is what we need, you know, and so everybody needs a day off.
Absolutely.
So it can be this celebratory mood. And so maybe if we get young people voting, but also in the sense of, hey, this is celebration, maybe a really good thing will happen. So
absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. And USF community, if you're listening, show up on Monday, October 22nd between 2 and 7. We'd love to have you come join us.
Well, Chris, thanks so much for all you do in the League of Women Voters. You just do some great things.
Thank you.
I will just put this music on, and you are listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater Community Conscious Radio.
We want voting representation. We want voting representation. We want voting representation.
We want voting representation.
We want voting representation.
We want
voting representation.
We want voting
representation.
We want
voting representation.
We want
voting representation.
We want
voting representation.
We want
voting representation.
We want
voting
representation.
The voting representation.
The
voting representation.
The
voting representation.
The
voting representation.
The
voting representation.
The
voting representation.
The
voting representation.
The
voting representation.
The
voting representation.
The
voting representation.
I'm going to pop this down because I'm really excited. We have such a packed show today, and I am so excited to welcome this next guest, Cindy Sheehan. Yes, Cindy Sheehan. She's been on this show so many times, and way back, I remember actually with Medea Benjamin and Code Pink and the tragic loss of her son, Casey, I think April April 4th, 2004, with the Iraq War, and Cindy Sheehan, a grieving Gold Star mother, decided that, Cindy Sheehan, why don't you decide? Why don't you tell what you decided and why you're in organizing, actually, the March on the Pentagon coming up this Sunday, October 21st, in Washington, but in many other places across the world and this country. And isn't it the anniversary of the march on the Pentagon in 1967 with the Vietnam War, Cindy?
I'm on the interview now. Yes, it's the 51st anniversary of a large mobilization against the Pentagon in 1967. There was a massive protest against the Vietnam War in Washington, D.C., and then the next day about 50,000 people went to the Pentagon to protest. So we chose that day because of that, but also we chose the Pentagon because we're protesting the war machine. We're not protesting the Republicans or the Democrats, because both of those parties are complicit in the war machine. So we call ourselves a nonpartisan march on the bipartisan war machine.
And Cindy, you have been involved in this for so long, but also you came kind of as a neophyte, you might say. And when your son Casey went to war and then the tragic events that happened, you've had quite a learning curve. You're kind of like Margaret Flowers, who I know is going to be one of your speakers on the rally then after the march on this coming Sunday. I remember with Margaret supporting, you know, single payer and physicians for a national health program. And then how she evolved and got into what happens actually in Washington, and got so disgusted with it that she realizes there had to be some changes. And so tell me, in your evolution, because we followed you right after you got first involved with Code Pink, and then when you went to the Crawfield Ranch and you protested, we've been following you. And so how have you seen the evolution from you not knowing too much and being politically involved to where you are now, in the sense of this country's response to the needs of its people?
Well, when my son was first killed, I was really angry at George Bush. And I wasn't ignorant of U.S. foreign policy. I grew up during the 60s, so, you know, I knew that U.S. foreign policy was, wrong most of the time, but I was also hoping that if the U.S. did something wrong, that it wasn't like a policy of the U.S. to do evil things, but it was just like a mistake. But after Casey was killed, and I really started to research U.S. foreign policy and look back at all of the times the U.S. got into these massive wars, that there was always an event that it was either, I like to use the word false flag. It was either, it was a real event that was, that were used to justify getting into these horrible wars. And the wars, then doing further research, I recognize that the U.S. has only been not in war for about 24 years of its existence. So war is a fundamental energy in the United States, war and violence. And of course, our nation was founded on genocide and forced African slavery. So how can, and we had to have a bloody war that killed hundreds of thousands of people before they even like got rid of slavery, and then slavery was just transformed into the new Jim Crow of prisons. But anyway, so we're just like this fundamentally violent and warlike society, and the Women's March on the Pentagon, and we are not saying, we're so sorry that we're saying that we're women and we're not apologizing to the men. But this violent energy is is male. It's male pattern violence, and it's patriarchy, and it's capitalism. So we're saying that there are many men who are coming and who are helping us and who are wonderful. We're not saying that all men are violent and all men are responsible. But so what we're saying is going to take this feminine energy to overcome these centuries-long patterns of war and other violence in the United States. So that's kind of been my evolution. And I was, I have worked with Code Pink, and Code Pink is helping us with the rally, and they're going to be here, of course, because they're based here in Washington, D.C. But I've also had my own organization, and I have Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I've had a podcast for almost 11 years now. If people want to go to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox to check that out. So that's my evolution, and that's our goal. Our goal is to stop patriarchy, stop imperialism, and to do that, it has to be, we believe, led by women, organized by women, and have this different kind of energy on our system. We have to make this wrong. We have to make these people shameful. And it's so hard with the media and with social media and video games and everything that people are distracted by and trying to make ends meet. It's really wrong to say, it's really wrong that we have to say that all these wars that the United States are in are shameful and wrong. And if we didn't have a Pentagon with a bloated budget, you might not have to work so hard. We could have a national health care system. We could have housing as a human right. We can have education as a human right without our young people having to go into tens of thousands of dollars of debt to get a college education. So there's so many things in this country that could be fixed along with our karma if the U.S. decided that it didn't want to be this extremist empire and have, almost 1,000 bases in 170 countries around the world. It's just wrong, and it has to stop.
And again, we're talking to Cindy Sheehan, and we're discussing the March on the Pentagon coming up this Sunday, and October 21st, and there are events on Saturday, and then on the following Monday. And, you know, Cindy, you've just gone through, I think, and I love the term you use, the violent energy. I find when one talks about, our predilection to war and how actually we've reached the point now with the gutting of the State Department that I think is pretty obvious to most people that we actually prefer violence and a type of warfare to solve our problems. And in fact, it's not even solving the problems necessarily as establishing a policy we want. But I always find that it's very hard because somehow the American people have just a mythic sense of kind of a nation that was, ordained by God and it was a democracy. The light on the hill, and I find that it's hard for people to really look at the history and wonder why like this. But tell me, Cindy, right now with the president we have right now, and we're watching just kind of horrified. Number one, right now, giving the excuses for the torture and perhaps murder, it looks like, of this journalist, essentially an American, not a citizen, but a permanent resident of this country, wrote for the Washington Post. And we see him making these excuses that, maybe it didn't happen, or if it did, And to me, and then as you pointed out, 60 cents out of every dollar in our budget goes to military purposes one way or another. Do you think that we've kind of reached a zenith where it is so obvious that if we don't really look at some of, and I like your term, violent energy, that this country is almost on an unrecoverable path?
Almost. That's why us mothers, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, our allies need to to stop it, because we're the only ones that can stop it. Obviously, Congress members of both parties are bought and paid for by the war machine. And, you know, Wall Street benefits from the war machine. So few people profit, and everybody in this country, whether they know it or not, and everybody in the world are harmed by U.S. imperialism. And so it's only going to stop when we, the people, gather together to stop it. And hopefully more women will join us, because, unfortunately, the movement that started or that got reignited when I camped out in George Bush's Crawford, Texas ranch kind of diminished when the Democrats came back into office in 2006, and when Obama became president in 2008. Obama took 3 Bush wars and expanded them to 7 wars, and expanded AFRICOM to where over 90% of the countries in Africa have a U.S. military base with very little opposition. And we have to say, it doesn't matter if we're Democrat or Republican, this war machine harms us all. And it doesn't matter who we vote for this in November or in 2020, unless we, the people, stop it, the war machine will continue.
And tell me, Cindy, do you think it's fear that people are afraid? They're actually afraid of the enemy? Or do you think it's reached the stage that there is such a struggle for the average person? They can go on all they want about the economy. But in this country, you know, that the wages are not adequate, and the terrible expenses one has, that one really is barely hanging on with one job. Many people have to do more than that. And do you think that they think that, well, if I say anything, I might get in trouble? Or I have to believe that my nation is great and good and the shining light on the hill, or else what's happening in my life, which is kind of going backwards, what do I have to show for it? Have I been conned? Do you think any aspect of that is in play, that people kind of reach the point that they overreact and accepting all these injustices because deep down they realize things are not going well at all, but they've got to have something to believe in?
Well, I think that there's a lot of people are just struggling, and they don't really have the time or the energy to research and find out what's really happening. They just, like, get their sound bites from television or Twitter or whatever, and they just don't, you know, they don't have enough of their own personal energy to get involved in it. I know in my own family, we have an issue with student loans. We have an issue with people working multiple jobs to make ends meet. And even though we care about these issues, people are always saying, Cindy, where are the young people? Where in the 60s with the Vietnam War, the students were radicalized because of the draft, but also if they were going to state schools, they were probably not paying any fees or tuition, which is a very large obstacle to young people getting involved these days. You know, if they're not part of the establishment, if their parents aren't profiting from the war machine, they're struggling to make their tuition. They're getting student loans, and they're getting, you know, grants, and they have to work to go to school. So even if they wanted to be activists and were outraged by these things, they don't have any time or energy to get involved in it. So it's just like this vicious imperial cycle that sucks. The Pentagon is sucking the life out of our communities.
Yeah, the money vice, yeah.
And in response, the people don't have the time or the money or the energy to protest it. And then there's a lot of fear, you know. 9/11 really changed the climate of this country from, to a fear-based citizenry that would put up with a lot of assaults on our civil liberties, assaults on our First Amendment rights, assaults on people in other countries, because we were told that torture and wars were keeping us safe. But at what price is this safety? And are we safe? You know, it's a really a question that needs to be asked.
And going back to Sunday, because I think you have an outstanding lineup. The march is actually from noon to 1, and then your rally from 1 to 4. You have some outstanding speakers, including Anne Wright. And did I notice that Sabrina Khan is also going to be part of your agenda?
Samira Khan?
Yes, Samira Khan. Yeah, I noticed she was too. Is that the mother of the Gold Star mother?
No, Samira she wasn't RT. She was a correspondent on RT.
Oh, okay.
She's a left-wing anti-imperialist campaigner. She's Pakistani-American. I know who the cons you're talking about, though.
Well, that's fine, but I noticed you have an outstanding lineup of speakers and
it's
music.
It's like a rock. It's like a rock. The rock stars of the anti-war movement with our speakers and our singers. It's just going to be an amazing event. We're hoping, like in 2005, when I camped out in Crawford, Texas, we're hoping that this really positive, wonderful energy will reignite a very long, sleepy anti-war movement in this country. And we have a website, marchonpentagon.com, if people want more information. And there are, like you said, solidarity events. If there's not one in your community, there's still time to paint some signs and go out on the corner and join us in solidarity on Sunday.
Well, Cindy Sheehan, thank you so much. I know how busy you are right now and for organizing this event. And I have to check on your podcast because I really would love to know what you're thinking and you're saying. And so tell us again one more time where people can hear those podcasts.
Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. So just put Cindy Sheehan Soapbox in your search engine. And I have 11 years of amazing archives.
I bet you do, because you have been a warrior personified. So, Cindy Sheehan, thank you so much for all you're doing and giving us this time today. I so appreciate all you have done, and you have certainly...
Well, thank you for inviting me, and it was nice to talk to you again.
Oh, it's always good to talk to you. So, Cindy, thank you so much, and you take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And Arlene, she's a very special person.
Yes, she is. I remember the many conversations with her, and they're always special.
Well, you know, we've got just a moment's time here. Let me see if we can't get this little business done. Just one second here, if I can get this cursor. And so let's give a listen to this.
Hi, this is Desiree Lynn with a WMNF community announcement. Tampa Food Not Bombs is a solidarity-based resource for the houseless community, sharing meals twice weekly in Lakes Gaslight Park downtown. Every meal we serve is a demonstration against America's massive food waste and lacking social services, while critical resources are diverted to militarism and war. We serve only vegan and vegetarian meals, and our shares take place Tuesday mornings at 8 a.m. and Saturdays at 4 p.m. You can check us out online at Facebook at Tampa Food Not Bombs.
And Arlene, you wanted to say something?
Yes, I wanted to say, if you're getting a new car, don't trade in your old one. Give it to WMNF. Your support is worth more than a low trade-in offer and helps ensure your favorite programs are here for you and your community. Call 1-888-966-3885 or visit WMNF.org. And I also wanted to say a big thank you to everyone who contributed to this show and to this station during our fall fund drive. We made our goal, and I understand that we got a terrific $250 contribution yesterday, so that even put us over goal. So thank you to all of you who have contributed, whether it was on our show or other shows, to WMNF. That will keep us on the air for the next 4 months.
And I don't know if she wanted to be anonymous, or that generous contributor, if she happens to be listening. I do want to have you on the show soon so we can talk about lead in the schools, but also some of the changes with both the mercury and the radiation changes by the EPA. The environment is under serious challenges, and I know you and your organization are big time in doing that. And I am noticing that phone. Do you think that, Arlene, would you answer that? Because we're expecting a call from R.J. Gillum, and I just wonder if that might not be she, but we'll see. That's all right. Let me put some music on, and then we can get established here. Let me put this music on.
Tired eyes are watching in the night. The stars come out to guide the way. The sun still shines despite the clouds. And the dawn is dusk, is dawn, is dusk, is day. Farmers rise and dream to feed the world. The world awakes to feed the heart. Hearts beat while a thousand flags are waving. And the farmer sees a dream has played a part. We will have...
Well, I am going to pod this back down because with us on the line right now, we are really excited. I believe we have R.J. Gillum. R.J., can you hear me?
I can hear you. Good morning.
Oh, great, great. We are so excited to be talking to you, and I'm so appreciative of your calling in. I know how busy your schedule is right now. And first, before we get into everything, how are things up in Tallahassee in that area of Florida after Hurricane Michael? How are they progressing?
Well, I'll tell you, it is. We're blessed. In Tallahassee, we didn't have a direct hit. Many of our areas were impacted. This is a beautiful city full of beautiful trees, and many of those trees come down during hurricanes. So just after the storm, we had more than 90% of the people who live in the city of Tallahassee who were without their power. By the weekend, it was the goal for Andrew and the rest of the city officials to have power up and running for 90% of Tallahasseans, and they were able to do that. They were at about 92% this weekend. So as of last night, they had a city commission meeting, and there were just above 300 people in the city that didn't have power. So we are honestly just blessed and lucky, but what we experienced pales in comparison to some of our neighbors to the west. So there are a lot of efforts going on. I know the campaign is collecting donations, many of our nonprofits here, many individuals, and just making trips daily over to our counties to the west of us, especially the Panama City area, Blountstown, Mariana, Mexico Beach. Some of those areas were just devastated. So we're doing all we can to make sure we are as helpful as possible to our neighbors in the Panhandle, because it's going to be a long road to recovery for them.
There's nothing like these unexpected tragedies that kind of prioritize really what life is about. Isn't that true?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you hate to see it, but it also just kind of, it warms your heart to see that we get back to who we are as true people. You know, there's no politics in something like this. This is just people helping people, neighbors cooking and donating. You know, sometimes you look at people and say, you don't even have a lot, but you're willing to give what you have to someone else. So it's awesome to see all the Panhandle neighbors kind of coming together to support each other.
Well, RJ, I've really been wanting to talk to you, and I'd also like to talk to your mother-in-law, because I really think it's important that, in other words, we go through so many policies and so many issues, and they really are important. But to me, like right now, a Hurricane Michael throws all the great plans off the track, and you have to give attention to people's absolute needs, you know, because they literally are in desperate need of electricity, of water, of food, of roads, of the whole thing, the kind of structure that makes life livable. And so, but I think that I always like to know more about candidates, because at the bottom line, it's their character, really, that actually is the reason I will vote or not vote for somebody. And so I'm interested in you. Did you and your husband, Andrew, did you meet in college or what?
We did. We were both students in the Student Government Association at Florida A&M University back in the late 90s. I'm actually 2 years older than Andrew. He came into Florida A&M in 1998, and he was a freshman senator in our student senate, and I was a junior senator. So we kind of laugh at how time has changed, because when we were in college, we didn't really get along. We were, you know, student government at FAMU was always just a great a training ground for students and student leadership. You know, we had some, as many of the state schools do, awesome responsibilities. At the time when we were at FAMU, the student government was in charge of the ANS budget, and that, you know, money that came from each student's fees, then we allocated that. And that was more than $2.5 million for some college students. So we dealt with some big issues. We also were
students. But I'm curious, why didn't you get along?
Oh, well, it's funny. You know, at some schools, they actually have political parties. We did have parties at FAMU, but we did kind of have some groups and factions. And it just so happened that Andrew and I were in two little different groups of people. We laugh at it now because we all had the same goals, and we all worked together when it was time to work together. But it just so happened that my little group of friends and his group of friends were kind of separate groups. So it makes us chuckle now because we grew then. We became good friends, and we actually did not date until years later after we both graduated. And I think it was our friendship and our working together in school that kind of brought us together.
Well, now, I was interested in your experience at FAMU because actually, didn't they start a program, not a president's program, but whatever, and so they kind of encourage you to get involved in politics or at least understand it, et cetera, and that actually became kind of a shaping aspect in your life. Is that how you eventually ended up being with Alex Sink?
I think so. I always kind of had an interest in public service. I never necessarily wanted to run for office, but, you know, I grew up in Montgomery, Alabama, and the history, I'm actually going home today that some friends are having a fundraiser for Andrew, and I attended church at Dexter Avenue King Memorial Baptist Church. My parents, my grandparents, they all took public service, community service, and civic duty very seriously. Both of my parents were educators. They were involved in teachers' unions. So that was kind of what shaped me, that when I got to FAMU, I wanted to be a good student, but I also wanted to be involved. So one of the first things I did was, become a student leader. There's so many different programs at FAMU. We had presidential ambassadors. We had our student government association. And one of our main jobs was to help recruit. So when FAMU would have football games out of town, the students, you know, we'd wear our suits and our badges, and we walked around and we talked to high school students about the importance of higher education, what a great place FAMU was. We did this primarily for African American students, but we learned so much. We learned to have pride in our school, pride in our education, pride in the opportunities that we had. So I think that kind of always shaped me to want to do more in public service. An interesting path to go into work for Alex Sink was that Governor Jeb Bush, who Andrew and I were students who protested him when he was governor, but when I was in graduate school, Governor Bush created a gubernatorial fellows program. And I was in the very first class of that, and the whole point of it was to make sure you had students who were, from whatever party, but just had an interest in serving in public service, and we were all assigned to a different agency. We got to sit in some of his agency head meetings, so I learned a lot about how Florida worked, and I really knew I wanted to kind of go into my background was public health. I wanted to go into policy, and that's how I ended up working with CFO Sink, which was an awesome experience.
And as I understand it, you particularly were aware of the dangers to health of oral hygiene. And so there was a point in your life when you considered becoming a dentist. Is that right?
I did. My whole life grew up wanting to be a dentist. I just always loved teeth. And what it did for you, my mom was a health educator, so she kind of talked about the entire body. But I realized that there was a self-esteem aspect kind of tied into the cosmetic part of dentistry and just fell in love with learning more and more about it. And then when I got into public health, I kind of developed a passion for what I consider the two unmet health needs, and that's mental and dental. But dental was one that I actually got to do some work on at Department of Health, and actually now with my current position with the Florida Dental Association.
And I'm very interested because to me, actually, you know, I have decided a long, long time ago, you know, not just long before I started doing the show, that a country, a person, it depends on your moral character, your moral roots, so to speak. And I have decided that the African-American women are the moral heart of this country. And it came from slavery, so to speak, and their efforts to keep family, to keep it together, etc., and to always try and lift their children into something better. And that, you know, to me, all of that has become a kind of a deep power, a deep energy, if you will. And I was impressed that your first name is like Rochetta. And doesn't that come from your father, who, when his first student got her PhD, that he was so excited that he was her mentor, so to speak, that that's how you got your name?
That's correct. Yeah, it's Rochetta. It's the Islamic name, Arabic name, excuse me. And he had, my dad, this was many, many years ago in the 70s, he had a student who actually was terminally ill, and she suggested this name, a list of names, but this was one, and it meant before her time. So that was the name my dad gave me. Interestingly, I've never used the name, always liked it, but I've always gone by my middle name, which is J, just J-A-I. Most people think RJ is just the two initials. And when I grew up, everyone in Alabama calls me J. Everyone in my family, even Andrew, calls me J. But when I got to CMU, they said I was going to have to go by my first name. And I told them, I said, well, if someone calls me that, I might not even turn around. And the lady in the registrar's office said, I'm just going to put an initial here. So on my official records at FAMU, it was RJ, and everyone kind of loved it, and it just stuck, and it was, you know, it became the name that I used. But I appreciate you saying that. I think growing up, my strongest mentors, my mother, my grandmother, we have what I consider to be a traditional progressive family. I value the fact that Andrew is the head of our household, but he very much sees me as a partner, and I think he values the strength in not just Black women, but all women, and the role we play in society as we shape our children and our communities. It doesn't even have to be your children. You know, when I grew up, I had many mothers that kind of were responsible for me and felt a responsibility to me. And I think we have to get back to that, is just being accountable for all of our young people in the community so that they have something to look up to, some kind of role model, you know, not being scared to be leaders in our community, even if we don't actually have titles. So I really appreciate your saying that, Mary.
Well, I feel it comes from a terrible roots of slavery in this country. And I feel that if it was not for the strength and their capacity to always know that there is more to life than the conditions of your situation. And it's part of the bring it home. And I'm thinking of Michelle Obama and Barack Obama, how different the background, Michelle and Barack, but they came together. And to me, I always look for a person, no matter, and you're right, it doesn't have to be African-American, but do they bring the kind of energy and the strength that that whole community or that family, and however they intertwine it with church or however, does that person bring that energy to their lives? And you know, to me, I cannot look at your husband and not see his background in Miami and the very difficult and the kind of strength it took, but so pivotal when he saw his mother when the police came to their house down in Richmond Heights in Miami, that they were looking for somebody who drove his car. You know, it was obviously not a real good situation. And when they left and his mother broke down crying so badly, and he vowed, he was only about 9, that he was never gonna cause his mother that kind of pain. And to me, that's, I look for that kind of stuff, because when things get tough, you know, when a Hurricane Michael or whatever comes at us, that's the energy you've got to go to. And if you can not reject that, if you're not ashamed of your past, but if you actually embraced it, saw its benefits, but also saw all the dangers, then to me, that is a really important character virtue. And so that's why I kind of wanted to talk to you because, tell me, was that part of the problem up in FAMU when you guys didn't get along? You came from a very different kind of background of working through problems. Was Andrew a bit more brusque? Did he think there's a solution here, we want to have it right now, or am I totally off base?
Oh, yeah, no, I think it's funny you say that because it also comes into how we are as a couple, how we partner together is I think we are great complements. Mary, I believe everything that I have done and he has done in his life has prepared us for this moment. I was part of this women's leadership program a few years ago, and I told him that I have always struggled with the fact that sometimes I feel as though I can't speak out enough, you know. I wish I could be the one to stand up and say the thing that no one else will say. And it has taken me 40 years, I'm now 40, to realize that there is strength in grace and that the role I play and the personality I have is exactly who I'm meant to be. I'm meant to be the strong but graceful one. And I also recognize that the role that Andrew is meant to play is to be a bold and courageous leader. I have found it fascinating just in being married to him and following him as he's been a local elected official, how many leaders we have, whether you're elected or not, who are just afraid, who are scared to say the thing that needs to be said or do the thing that needs to be done. And maybe it's because they're scared they won't get reelected, or maybe they're scared they may lose their job. But I think that we have all realized that we've come to a point where we need a bold and courageous leader, because there are many of us who may not be able to say the things that need to be said. And that's why there's value in an Andrew Gillum. It is not anything he's ever had to read in a book. We just look at all the problems that the state is facing. He will be able to approach these challenges in a unique way that he's very intelligent. He's very has an astute policy mind. But the thing that no one else has that Andrew has is what you just mentioned, growing up in Richmond Heights, then a very different experience in middle and high school in Gainesville, then his college experience at a historically black college in a city that happens to be the capital where we were exposed to state government. You know, there are just so many experiences that he has had that he can apply to his leadership as the governor. And I'm proud of that. I'm proud of who he's become. I think you hit the nail on the head. There are people who have some attacks, and the reason we're not afraid of those attacks is because it's like when you go in for a job interview, you know, you can say to someone who you are, but there is enough evidence of who you really are. You might be able to do a good job in that 30 minutes, but someone can go back through your entire resume. They can call your references. They can talk to people who knew you. They can ask your previous bosses. And that is what the true story will be, and not the narrative that someone has decided to create for you.
And if in your experience of living, you have seen people die because they did not have adequate health care, you have seen people languish in prison because they didn't have the money to pay the bond or to pay the bail, you've seen the problems once you've been in jail, how to find a job, you've seen the problems of education. And so it doesn't mean necessarily that your policies will solve it, but you have seen it firsthand. And again, I look to see if that character from those roots, these old slave roots that came up through church and a worship of God and a worship of possibility, or his grandmother saying, bring it home. You know, you grow up, you go to school, you get an education, but then come back, bring it home. So I'm looking at the time, and RJ, I have really enjoyed talking to you so much, RJ Gillum, but I'm going to let you go. And I do appreciate, I know how busy you are, you're giving us this time, because I'm always trying to find the character of some of the people that, are wanting to lead us. And so thank you so much for giving us this time today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate your support and allowing us this platform. Andrew's an awesome man of integrity. He's going to make a fantastic governor.
Well, you are a fantastic woman yourself. So thank you so much, RJ Gillum. You take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mary.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Now, lovely woman, wasn't she?
She sure was. Excuse me.
And Arlene, do you have any announcements, anything to say?
I just want to repeat that website where you can find out about the voting
amendments.
In your area, you can find out about the amendments. Of course, you can go to League of Women Voters to find out the amendments. And another site that they have is vote411.org. And you put in your address and you can bring up specifics for your area.
Okay, you've been listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater, Community Conscious Radio. Just keep it tuned here all day, people. Holly Near, we're going to go out to Grace Peace March.
Ancient eyes are watching in the night. The stars come out to guide the way. The sun still shines despite the clouds. And the dawn is dusk, is dawn, is dusk, is day. Farmers rise and dream.